It's the Tiltcast, episode 590, Boss Sauce.
And this week, guys, we talk more MechWarrior 5, the last spell, Boar Blasters, and Kinitsugami. Stay tuned.
Gotta develop that flavor.
Oh, damn it. We're back.
Yeah.
Somebody hit a button.
Yeah.
Somebody hit a button. It is the Tiltcast. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
I'm Cranky.
I mean Rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. It is 77 degrees and more rain is expected and more algae is expected in my pool.
79 degrees, and I imagine it's sunny, but in my dungeon, I don't see the sun, so.
Imagine about break time, I'm just going to go toss some algicide in the pool, anticipating the rain. Is that about what you're doing, Jason?
Oh, no, I have active algae trying to grow in my pool.
I do too.
I was camping all week this week, so when storms hit Wednesday morning early, I wasn't here to shock and chlorinate it afterwards.
Yep, I'm going to have to do that again this afternoon. All I've been trying to do is swim in my damn pool, and it just keeps raining. This is the weirdest, rainiest July ever. It was hotter in June. This is probably like, what, the sixth time it's rained this July?
Yeah, which is weird, because when I checked like the 30-day forecast on like June 20th, because we'd already been hot for several days straight, right? I checked the 30-day forecast. We were forecasted to have 29 out of 31 days be over 100 heat index.
Oh yeah, it's been four or five maybe.
And it's, yeah. The amount of long-term unanticipated rain has been wild.
And for those of us who, it's not like me and Jason are rich. We both have above-ground pools. This is slightly bigger than mine. This has meant that, like, every other day I'm in my pool scraping the bottom, backwashing my filter, getting rid of algae, throwing a little bit of algicide, waiting for that to stabilize, checking the pH of my pool, then shocking it again. I've shocked my pool so many times, but I haven't been able to take a lot of advantage of being in the pool because it keeps fucking raining. I'm sick of it.
I'm basically at the point I'm going to have to waste vacuum my pool once this algicide has had a chance to work and kind of break it all up. And once I'm done with that, I'm going to have to change out the sand in my filter.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
To try to keep any of that from coming back.
Yeah, I've just been back. I've backwashed mine so much, I've filled probably 6 inches of my pool from just backwashing all the. Like, I'm doing it like two or three times a day, backwashing it, wait until it goes clear again, you know? And then going and chalking it again. Like, I know that I've kept it in check, but, like, I'm still scraping up the bottom and seeing some algae particles, you know? And I got that big, it looks like a huge squeegee. It's got, like, rubber on the bottom, and I use that to, you know, scrape down the sides of the pools and the bottom of the pool. I do that, and then, because those particles are so fine, every time I try to vacuum it, it just comes out the other side. Like, the bottom of my pool is, aside from a little bit of algae that's on the bottom, is pretty damn clean. There's not a leaf, there's not a bug, nothing. Like, I'm running my pool vacuum every, like, two times a day right now. It's crazy.
But, yeah, man. It's just all the rainwater we've gotten, which, you know, usually by this point in July, we're talking about drought conditions in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. There's no shortage of water right now. Yeah, it's been a week. We've all been really busy. You've been camping all week. I did a bunch of pictures last weekend, and I wasn't free to game or do anything till about Tuesday late evening. Rusty, you've been cooking and doing people. These two things don't go together, but cooking and also doing books.
Right.
Not cooking books.
Yeah, it's it's been a really weird week for me. But yeah. I've been, I am going to be doing something new cooking, I guess. So we're going to be, I don't know why. And I have no idea why or why this became so popular up here, but if you need to do a fundraiser, spaghetti dinners is a thing up here. And apparently, a lot of people go to them as a fundraiser thing, and I have no idea why, but I make a pretty mean spaghetti sauce, so I have been tapped to make the spaghetti sauce for a spaghetti dinner fundraiser. So, more cooking. I cook on the industrial scale, apparently. I'm going to be breaking out my big stock pot for this one.
Yeah, you do know how to cook at scale. I don't know how to. I have a harder time cooking at scale. I can cook for about 4 or 5 people tops.
No, I'm going to be cooking for about 150 minimum. The great part about that is that if I make too much sauce, it never goes to waste. Because, you know, when I make my spaghetti sauce probably twice a year or so. Because when I make it, I make enough of it so that I can freeze it and it's ready. I can pull it right out of the freezer and pop it into a saucepan on low and just let it, just let it come to temp. And it's so good. It's so good. So.
Yeah, I need to learn how to make sauce.
It's not bad. I got a lot of it. See, I learned a lot of it from just watching, in my free time, I watch educational shit on YouTube because that's just the way I am. I can't stand reaction videos, so I'm like, I'm just going to watch somebody, like, cook. Or I'm going to watch some science thing or something like that. Well, through watching all this shit together, I came up with some really interesting ideas, and I changed how I made my sauce. And now my sauce is pretty boss.
He's the boss sauce.
Oh god, that was cringe. But yeah, it's pretty good. It's about pulling, developing flavor over time, and not just rushing something, but actually like simmering it so that it actually, infuses flavor and isn't just one note. A lot of spaghetti sauce, you get like the ragu shit, it's all one note. It's tomato, and that's about it. But I like to use fresh herbs and, different meats and put it in different times and make sure that it develops flavor. So that it's tasty as fuck.
I mean, that's the good way to go about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I just finished cooking at a large scale Friday night. I did a shrimp and crab boil for almost 30 people.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I made I'm not going to profess to be able to cook exactly like a Cajun Louisiana native could cook. Right. But
I'm not a I'm not Italian, so.
But the fact that I have people's lips going numb and them still saying, this is the tastiest shit I've had in a long time, I take the win.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you do that. You definitely take that win.
Holy I was shit. Like, yeah, they just, a lot of them don't cook spicy, but I was like, there's only really one way to do a boil that I know, and that is you start with a good sized bag of Old Bay seasoning, right? And you get that in your water as you're going to boil it. And then all of your vegetables and all of your meats that you're going to put in the boil get a healthy dose of Cajun styled seasonings, which usually means a decent amount of cayenne, a decent amount of chili powder, a decent amount of coriander, you know, all those really good, flavorful, but also momentarily hot dry seasonings that you can put on on anything. And then you're dropping that into the boiling water that's just full of Old Bay and butter and stuff, right? So, this was all stuff that none of these people were used to because, it was Crystal's family and none of them cook with a lot of seasoning. Like, ever. And I'm like, the guy who has to have seasonings for most things.
But yeah. I mean,
I don't understand that. Cheese is not a seasoning.
Cheese is definitely not a seasoning. What the hell?
I never said it was.
No, I'm just saying that's common with cooking here. Or I was just watching, you know, you get the Facebook Reels or whatever. And there's a guy that I watch sometimes that reacts to all that stuff. Somebody, I guess, who's probably a line cook or something, right? But just all the one pot crock pot meals that are just like noodles, cheese, and meat. And then you're like, okay, and then what do you season that with? Oh, it's just noodles, cheese, and meat. What does that taste? It just tastes like nothing. It's just a goop.
Noodles, cheese, and meat. What?
Okay. Oh, it's usually that or like, you know, add a vegetable, but like, not even salt, or they'll be like, I'm going to add a little bit of pepper, and it's like a tablespoon of pepper to a whole pot of something.
No.
I think about, like, I made so what you missed out on, Jason, is I took a chuck roast, and I smoked a chuck roast. Originally, I was going to smoke the whole thing, but ended up smoking a chunk of it because it was just me, John, and Dave. And I have a jar of just salt and pepper, essentially, that's for smoking beef, right? It's just a huge can of salt and pepper that's all rough cut, you know? And the whole thing was covered with that. And when I was done, and, you know, it was really tender, right? Like, you know, you just pull it apart. It's basically just like roast beef, but smoked and kind of like a brisket. So I tear it apart, right? And then put it in the container so that we could make sandwiches out of it. And then I took that, you know, that salt and pepper and mixed that in there. And then I mixed in some chili flakes. And that elevated it to the next level, let me tell you. Did not glaze it with barbecue sauce. Like, I asked them if they wanted barbecue sauce, and I had barbecue sauce on hand. Nobody even put barbecue sauce on it. Like, it was fucking tasty. That's because my meat was fucking seasoned. Seasoned with four real main things, right? Smoke, obviously. And then, you know, the salt and pepper and chili flakes. And it was a healthy amount of chili flakes. For that whole thing, I put, like, some pretty hot chili flakes not sponsored, but Flatiron makes some of the best, like, pepper flakes around. And probably put about 2 tablespoons and about 2 pounds of that and mixed it in with the salt and the pepper, and it just added a little bit of kick to it for the sandwich. And, like, you could have added other things, right? Some jalapenos, a piece of provolone or something like that, but I don't think it really needed it. Like, it was delicious. We all had 2 sandwiches. I have that for leftovers for night. I'm pretty excited about that. But yeah, I don't understand the no seasoning thing. Like, I even have, like, my own taco seasoning, right? Of course, having Hispanic background helps, but...
Well, yeah.
I have quite a few things that I put in that. I'm not releasing that recipe over the internet, but it's good stuff.
If there's one thing I've learned about the majority of Oklahomans, and I'm talking about those that live outside of, like, Tulsa and Oklahoma City, right? Because you do have to admit there is a difference. You know, our metropolitan cities have had far more influence from people who've moved here from other states or other countries even, right? So you have a whole lot more variety of food. You know, you go to, just as an example, you have a whole lot more flavor variety, seasoning-wise, etc., at, like, barbecue places in or near Tulsa or Oklahoma City than you do just out in rural Oklahoma, unless it happens to be, you know, close to the Texas state line, in which case, you know, there's a lot of heavily Texas-influenced flavor the closer you get to that. You know, a lot of them just, you know, it's like salt and pepper, you know, maybe some traditionally Italian herbs, right? Like parsley, oregano, that sort of thing. But spice, generally steered away from.
Oh, come on, man. Yeah. I've been trying to be quiet for this entire thing, but I'll tell you, spice does not exist up north, man.
My boil was straight up killed members of your family.
Oh yeah, I mean there's I haven't brought this up before, but mild buffalo sauce. There's just no tolerance for heat up here. I mean, when you have to make a mild version of buffalo sauce, it just basically is like, it's just orange.
I went up to Minnesota last fall, and I remember that I wanted something spicy for my sandwich. I got a panini right at this little pub and grill. I wanted something, you know, and the only, like, spice they had was, like, salt and pepper. I was like, do you got any, like, hot sauce? And they had some mild Cholula. That was all they had. I was like, okay. That's all right. It was a very sweet sandwich.
Sweet and savory, but not spicy up here.
Yeah, everything had jam. I don't understand that.
It's very weird.
Not a condiment for, like, jam is like a dessert.
Like, a jam on a meat sandwich?
Yeah, I don't understand
that. Yeah. It comes from the same, it's the same combo as, like, turkey and cranberry sauce. Like, yeah, I guess it kind of is all right, but it's not what I would go for an entire meal. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to try this bite. Okay, this is a very odd combo. I'm going to go back to just having a turkey sandwich now, you know? But yeah, the intolerance for spice up here is pretty friggin' legendary. Like, I have, you know, won very many bets, because they're like, oh, I bet you can't have, you know, you can't handle this. And I'm like, what is this? This is this is your hot sauce. Okay, let me, they call it apocalypse sauce or some bullshit. And I'm like, and then they're like, do you want to have the sauce on the side? And I'm like, no, dip the whole fucking sandwich in it.
Right. Because you lived in the South that. And you were forged in fire.
Right. Right. No, I did the, there was a chicken sandwich and they're like, you know, an apocalypse chicken sandwich. It comes with apocalypse sauce on it. And I'm like, and I'm, they're like, do you want the sauce on the side or on the sandwich? And I'm like, dip this, you know, the chicken in it. And they're like, they just look at me. They're like, no, I want every nook and cranny of that chicken to have apocalypse sauce on it. You know, and they're like, okay, but before you order this, how about you try some of the sauce? And I'm like, bring it on. So they bring out this little cup of fucking of apocalypse sauce, like, and it's like a halfway full of this thing. So I'm like, okay, fine. And I just down the whole freaking sauce. And I'm like, I sit back, and I know the waitress is just staring at me, right? And I'm like, yeah, this is all right. No visibly, you know. No pain on my face, not visibly, you know, flustered about it at all. And she just looks at me and she's like, you're a completely different breed, aren't you? And I'm like, I mean, I want some spice with some flavor. It can't just be hot, too. I mean, it's got to have flavor to it. So.
Oh, yeah. It's not like the last dab where it's hot to be hot.
Well, last dab, some of the last dabs are actually, you know, have some good flavor to it. That's the thing. That's got a smoky, peppery flavor to it that, you know, is hot for sure, but it's not like hot just to be like capsaicin hot, you know? Like the Apollo sauce. Oh, I actually like that on tacos.
Yeah, I it's funny you mentioned this. Me and my girlfriend were talking about it the other night. One of my friends came in from out of state. She likes my salsa, and I make a serrano pepper salsa.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, all right, so like 90% of the people that are going to be there cannot do anything with any heat, so make something mild. So I did, right? I added just this, the smallest amount of savory with some chili sauce that I made, right, with New Mexico red chilies, which are not hot. It's a savory pepper. Made a sauce out of that. And most people could eat that. And there was a couple of people like, oh, that's a little bit spicy. I'm just going to have to take it easy. I was like, oh, my God. Weakest asshole ever. And then the sriracha or the serrano one I made is mostly serranos with some jalapenos. And it was like me, John, my friend Vanessa, who'd come in from out of state, and then my tattoo artist, Eric. We were the only ones eating it. And we ate like a pound of that salsa inside of an evening. Like, she's like, it's so good. It's hot. My lips are numb. This is exactly what I wanted. And it's really good. Like, I throw a lot of cilantro in it, if that's appealing to anybody. But,
like, that's where spice hits its peak. Like, if it feels like you're losing feeling in your lips, but you can still taste all the food, that's perfect.
Yeah, I like flavor. Like, you know, I can do the hot challenges because, like, the one chip challenge I can do a 5-chip challenge, right? Like, to me, that the worst part about the one chip challenge is that chip is always fucking stale.
It is. It's very stale.
So, anywho, the hot food seasoning. Yeah, we did that.
We did that all over.
Rusty, you've been busy. Did you get any time to game?
Nah, I mean, not anything really exciting. Honestly, I have really not sat down to put any time into a game for any, like, substantial bits. So I've been just kind of, like, playing a little bit of Final Fantasy XIV. Which is, you know, the initial hype of the new expansions kind of, you know, dying down. There's not very many people like sticking around, which is normal. And it's just kind of like gone into the normal, you know, expansion maintenance cycle. So new raids come out, new crafting materials, this, that, the other thing. But the most people have gone through the main story, and that's it's still a fun distraction, but right now it's just kind of a distraction. But I mean, if I had to guess, I probably spent maybe 6 hours this entire week playing. So it's not a lot. Just too goddamn busy.
Well, I've got the show covered when it comes around to me. But
yeah, it's there's some games that I've been kind of, you know, poking at, and I kind of, you know, I kind of want to go back and do a couple playthroughs of some older games. But I haven't really settled on anything just yet. It's just, I don't know. I mean, if I can get my free time back, I'll be happy. but this week's been kind of a wash for me. It's not been very fun. I've been very active outside of this, but it's mainly just, you know, working and then, you know, doing wiring projects for people and, you know, the boring shit where you actually get paid for it. Sometimes. But yeah, it's and that and cooking. And that's pretty much it. And I'm really boring this week.
Jason, did you have any game time while you're out, you know, doing your wilderness survival?
I wish, but no, I did not. I was extremely boring this week outside of the lake.
Well then, it's all on you, buddy.
I have you covered.
All right, then.
So, after editing, I went through 3,500 pictures last weekend, carved out about 200 gems, and got paid quite well for that gig. I was invited to another gig last night, and I was like, no, I need the weekend. And I played all the games, so I start with stuff as a recap from last week of stuff I continue to play. Started playing MechWarrior 5 again and was looking for some additional mods to just kind of pretty the game up, which I knew wouldn't break my save. I'm still playing campaign mode. I know I could do the other, or, you know, like the actual story mode, basically. I know I can do the campaign mode. I don't know why I went back through. It's a big sandbox, right? Like, that's just what that game is, and it's good for that. It's great for, like, sitting and listening to podcasts or music while you, like, fucking destroy shit. And I started with a mod called Von Biomes, which redoes biomes. And I recorded a little bit of a video of that. It adds a lot to the game, in that it just completely redoes some of the landscapes, especially some of the more boring landscapes, and adds things to it. Like, one of the things that adds is like redwoods to certain biomes, and then different tree palettes that look really alien. So, like, not all of the planets that you encounter look just like Earth. Like, it does change up some of the planets to look a lot more alien, so to speak. And then some of the, like, more barren stuff, it, like, adds additional effects to the sky and to the planets kind of out in the atmosphere to make it look a lot different. It is necessary, though, in some of those to use some of the new things that yet another mech lab adds, which is the different sight modes. So heat vision is necessary because some of those biomes, because they're so densely packed, really make the map really dark. And it's essential to do that. Or there was one, I was in a forest and I had to turn, like, you got two headlights, which is not in the original game. So you got like a low beam and a high beam, which was necessary. I was in a forest biome where the trees were kind of overgrown and like all over the place. You'd see stuff pop up on your radar, but like it will block your shots. So like that also with all the shadows cast by the headlights, almost turned it into like a weird horror game kind of thing, right? And then I had to like clear out the trees with my lasers while I was searching for stuff, which is kind of crazy. And then added something called War Effects, which I actually recently just turned off. War Effects adds a whole bunch of extra layers of smoke to the map, and it looks really neat. It does slow down even a 4090, 32 gigs of RAM. Even War Effects Lite does that. So I think you need to pick one or the other. Do you want the War Effects or do you want the Von Biomes? And I want the Von Biomes way more than I want the War Effects. But essentially, like when you destroy a mech, it still emits smoke. And then every ground tile that you hit emits like fire and smoke. So like if I hit a bunch of trees with a bunch of laser fire, that suddenly turns into what looks kind of like a forest fire. But it obscures view. And then just after a while, it just like, again, I'm dropping to like 25 frames a second in some places. So I've got a hog of a PC. And if it's doing that, like it's just not very well optimized. It looks super neat. I think with a whole lot less, I'm not even running ray tracing or anything. Like it just, it kind of fucks everything up. Von Biomes also slows down your processing. So depending on what you're running, you might have to run. Again, I like to run at 4K. The only way I could get both those mods to run together on my 4090 was running at 1440 to get at least 60 FPS, which I just didn't want to do.
Damn.
So, yeah. But on the flip side of it, you know, yet another Mac Lab adds a lot of customization. I've got my Highlander. I've got a Rifleman with double Gauss cannons, which is pretty insane. There's a whole bunch of other things like the I've got a Cyclops that's got electronic countermeasures on it, which disrupts aiming for the enemy. And it also has a big ass AC-20 on it and a fuckload of lasers. So like I've been playing that off and on. Like it's a good, you know, talking to my girlfriend or whatever. Like it's one of those games you can turn your brain off and just like have success, build more mechs, etc. It's still good. Tried out something that's another like bullshit turn your brain off game, which is called Boar Blasters. It is super cheap. I want to say $7.99. And I recorded some video of that as well. It's a mining game sort of. So you're like in a little helicopter and you shoot a gun, you can turn it on auto shoot and then you mine gems to get money for upgrades to your ship. And you just basically go from the top level all the way down. That's the goal. And you got to find a treasure chest at the bottom. And along the way, you fight different creatures, little goblins. So you've got little objectives that you need to do. You need to find this. You need to kill this thing, etc. Whole little story going on in between all of that. It's got a really great, weird techno soundtrack that has sounds retro and modern at the same time. It's really cool. Very high detail, pixel graphics. There's a whole bunch of unlocks that you're unlocking. It's a little bit roguelite, I think. I couldn't tell you for sure. But super good buy for just a little bullshit game to play on your Steam Deck or just while you're, you know, you just load a clothes in the laundry, etc. Like it's, I don't know, it's a game you want to play for like 4 hours straight. It's just, it's one of those type of games, right? Like a Vampire Survivors. Though sometimes Vampire Survivors you do play for 4 hours straight because it's just such a good game. Last Spell 1.0 came out a couple months ago. I decided I was finally going to go ahead and just boot that back up. I reset all of my progress, which seems kind of crazy, but I did it. I've got the Dwarves DLC. Didn't showcase it in any of the video that I recorded for it, but if you don't know what that is, it's a turn-based game tower defense. So, like, you've got a bunch of creatures, like, encroaching on your city, right? You've got a mage in the middle that's, like, trying to cast the last spell, right, to cleanse the land. And then you've got these little characters that you've got that come with random traits that you use to battle off the hordes of darkness that are coming at your base. And it's turn-based, and they all, the idea is to use your moves and your action points and your mana efficiently to keep the horde from attacking the guy in the middle. It means you got a phase where you build up your defenses and you do that by with cash. So the way that it works is you start the game, you fight off the hordes of darkness, you make a little bit of money. Use that money to buy upgrades for your characters Or you use it to build buildings that generate economy. And so that economy could be stone, which you use to upgrade defenses, or it could be cash, which you use to bolster, either buy new buildings, maybe buy another character. So like right now, my character limit is 4. So I can have 4 characters on the map. And then every night after you do all that, you kind of rinse and repeat. You gain some materials from some of those buildings that you built. You reshape your landscape to kind of build better defenses. You buy equipment upgrades for your characters. You level them up. They all have random traits based on their character class. And so you try to build out a team, outfit them, and then fight the darkness. And then eventually you get to a boss level. And I just beat the first boss, which took me about 2 or 3 runs to get the stuff together. So you have permanent upgrades too. So you get like a darkness upgrade. So the darkness stuff will upgrade different weapon sets and like stats for your character. So like they all have more health. Now I have crossbows, like whatever, right? It's stuff like that. And then I have other mission-based upgrades for multiple runs that's like, okay, so survive night 5 of the first level. Okay, now I have ends, and ends I can add more characters to my run, right? And so, or I can add houses to add more workers, and the workers I use to operate some of those buildings I have, those production buildings I have in the base to, you know, give my character back some health, to generate some more stone, etc., clear off an area, whatever. It's done in a really highly stylized pixel art thing, which I know I love these types of games when they're done good. Last Spell's a really good turn-based game, and it is, it's meant to be played over multiple runs, right? Like every run generates, doesn't matter like how shitty you do, you still generate stuff. And I feel like it's gotten a little bit faster. The runs don't seem as slow as they did before. So, I don't know. It's a really good game, and it launched at the right time. Like I'm playing a lot of it right now. Again, I've kind of got Elden Ring on pause. I'll come back to that and beat it. You want to hear more about it? Rusty has already beat it and talked at length about it the last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
We have all talked a lot about Souls games the last 90 days. So, other things, I paused my 7 Days to Die run because I've been running the 1.0 alpha that they've been doing. And it updates every single day as they add mini fixes. And after a while, my game kind of got corrupted. And so it runs like shit. Like it still runs, but like it's running like shit. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to wait through the official release. So the official release is in 4 days, I think this Thursday on the 25th. So I'm going to wait to play more of that. 7 Days to Die has never been better. It's launching on consoles. They just got certification for PlayStation and Xbox. So the 1.0 release goes live for everybody on the 25th. Highly recommend it. They're going to continue to add it. They're calling it the 1.0 update. It really is like an alpha, you know, 37 or whatever, right? Or alpha 23. But they're not going to release, they're going to release huge content updates instead of mini updates for the foreseeable future. So like the end game goal is to add the raiders in about this time next year. But they decided it's time to do a 1.0 or an official 1.0 that's a feature complete game, which it is now. And it works way better than it used to. The performance is way better. The graphics look a lot better. The game loop, I feel, is better. There's a lot of like custom maps. They give so the way that it works right now is there's 10 pre-gen maps, which are different than the Navis. So the Navis game is the original map they started with a million years ago. And they've just retooled the fuck out of it. I've played that so many times, though, I don't think I can play Navisgan anymore. Because I know where everything's at, right? There's no sense of discovery. I know where each biome is. I know kind of like I'm used to where each type of city is, etc. And I like the pre-gen and or the random gen. Then it's got a random gen with a whole bunch of tools where you can customize about where each one of the biomes is going to be. And then you can set up shop. And then they did some additional pre-gens. They did 10 other maps that are custom made that they've made that are pre-gen, kind of like a Navis game, but completely different, right? Like where they retooled it for certain types of players. And you've got those options now as well. But the pre-gen does a really good job. I like that the pre-gen almost always puts a trader by a neighborhood, right? Of sorts. So the first trader is by a bunch of essentially dungeons, right? and they're like level 1 through 4 dungeons. So it gives you a lot of like materials and a lot of different little areas to kind of comb through to get yourself set up. And one of the harder things about Navizgaine is it starts you off basically in the woods. You're far away from zombies, but you're also far away from anything other than organic supplies. So you're not finding crafting magazines. You're not getting huge rewards at the end of the dungeons. Like the way that it's set up right now is it's kind of like Skyrim in the way that you go through a dungeon, which is a house or a store or whatever. And at the end of it, there's always some reward crates, right? So those reward crates might have crafting books or ammo or food or supplies, etc. And they're all kind of, the rewards are kind of tailored to how your character is spec. So your character, like I had one character, it was a spear character. And he was doing spears and rifles. And so like a lot of times, a lot of my rewards would be based around how I was specking that character. I'd get books that help increase my damage with spears or my level with spears, which increased the amount of stuff that I could make. They've also made it to where it's not a good idea to just hold on to stuff. So, for example, you used to have to go into really high-tier dungeons to get epic level loot, right? The way they get around that is you craft all of your epic level loot. You get an epic component that you have to use as part of the level of the loot. And you get those frequently enough. So, like, I've got a run where I'm, like, on day 25, right, that I just paused. And I had 15 epic level components so that I could create 15 epic level items, which encourages you to make a level 6 or epic tier item at the current level of gear that you have. So, you know, I don't know that I'm going to make a level 6 or tier 6 stone spear, but like I had iron spears, or not spears, had batons. And so I got a stun baton that was an epic level stun baton. I had a epic level regular pistol, not the 44 Magnum, but I did have like an epic level regular pistol, which meant that it has like increased damage and also like high durability, so it could survive a whole horde night. The game loop's really solid right now. I can't wait to see what they do with Raiders. Hopefully it doesn't completely break everything. But learned a lot of lessons. I've made a lot of like little sample videos of different horde knights. I've got one that I failed miserably, made the wrong base type. And then I've got one where I really figured out how to use the electric fences to my advantage. And that base like just fucking stomped. So horde knights are also way harder. So that's another thing to just kind of keep in mind. It is okay to tune it down if you need to. I did not because I'm very stubborn, but I did finally figure it out. Last game that I really played a lot of, I started playing the other day. So I was looking at a game that Capcom released called Kanitsugami. And what it is a weird-ass tower defense game. This is really hard to describe. So the art style is like traditional Chinese, maybe, is what it feels like. From the music to the swords and the characters, or maybe like super ancient Japanese. I don't know. But it starts off and you feel like you're playing a side-scroller. It is not that at all. Kind of gives you the basics of how your character moves and fights. And then it gets you into an area. This is going to be really hard to explain. So it's a tower defense game. Let's start with that. And the loop is do the tower defense loop, and at the end, gain materials to build up your base to unlock additional upgrades for your troops and for your character. That's the super bare bones description of this game. The art style has got those like super weird to me anyways, like Japanese demons. From like, you know, like paintings from like the 1600s on back. They're all weird and original to me. Again, maybe if you watch a lot of anime, it's not original to you. But to me, it's very original. They're very creepy and weird. And your idea is to cleanse the path. And I'm trying really hard to explain this. So you have this princess, basically, right, that's at the beginning of the level. And let's think of it like a side-scroller, even though you can turn the camera any way you want, basically, like almost all the way around. But it's 3D, but also you can play it from the side or above, etc. And then you have a an endpoint that's at the end of this path all the way to the right. And the goal is to get the princess from the beginning all the way to the end. And so the level will start out and it'll say cleanse the path. You take your character and he runs with a sword and cleanse this weird gross stuff all the way to where the entry point is. And then along the way, you find all these people like trapped in like weird demon plants. You free all of them. And then the whole time there's a timer kind of ticking down really slowly, like getting closer to night. So you set the lady up to cleanse the land and she starts to slowly move, right? And while she's moving, it'll give you an indicator where she's going to stop and night's going to start. And that'll tell you like she'll get here when night hits, right? So as you're freeing all of these villagers from the weird gross demon plants, you can then change the roles to different battle types, right? So far I've unlocked archers and woodcutters. Woodcutters have an axe, archers have a bow and arrow. So now I know where the path is going to stop before night hits. So now I position these people along this path to block any kind of enemy hitting my princess, right? And so once night hits, then the demons come out of the hole. It's all the way over to the right. I've got to defend the princess against that. And it continues to build on itself to where you unlock additional character types, right, to help defend. You can reposition them. They take damage, so you got to heal them sometimes too. And the whole time, your character can, like, do weird backflips and, like, he's got a sword and he's, like, cutting through all of this stuff and he's got, like, power-ups and super abilities. And on some of these, there's, like, a boss demon that you have to fight. And, of course, you got to set your characters up in a way that they will help repel that. You can also command them to attack that creature based on how far away they are from the creature. It's got a little pause system you can use to, like, pause and issue commands to the characters. And I use that to help reposition them to make sure they're blocking certain choke points while I kind of, like, keep everything busy at the edges, so to speak. They keep everything protected and then help me out, and then I do that to help me mitigate everything. And then the boss fight is like you have to like dodge attacks and stuff, kind of like a Souls game, not nearly as complex as a Souls game, right? But you got to dodge and you got to coordinate your people to attack, and you got to use super moves to stun them and then cause your guys to attack harder when the creature's stunned, etc. But you do all those things, right? And then at the end of that, right, it could be like a several tiered level where you got to kind of do that path over and over again, and it progressively gets harder until you get to the end. And at the end of that, you go back to that area you're just in and you turn it into a base. So I guess the impetus of what it's doing is driving you forward to cleanse the land, right? But at its core, it's basically a tower defense game with a whole lot of unique stuff. It looks really good. There's nothing else like it. I'm enjoying it quite a bit so far. It's a really weird game. Art style is gorgeous. Never seen something so gorgeous look so grotesque at the same time. It's like colorful horror, maybe what I would describe it as, like what you're fighting back. I don't know. It's a really weird game, but I'm glad that somebody decided to make something that is so anti what everything else is out right now to make something this weird and unique. And the graphics are really good too. Super weird. Not usually my typical forte. It's on Game Pass. On Steam, it's like $49. It's a really weird and cool game, and it's a really big breath of fresh air for me. Not a whole lot of dialogue either. Like, you skip it if you want. Like, it's pure gameplay. Like, it knows what it needs to be. It's a pure gameplay game. There's a little bit of story to kind of keep you going on. Not the story's bad, but it knows that nobody gives a fuck really about the story. I'm really way more invested in this weird visual. I don't know. It's so weird. But it's cool.
It sounds weird.
It's on Game Pass too. Again, save me $50. So I've been playing that. I've gotten through four stages so far. I recorded something super early in the game. You can replay the levels, and it encourages you to do that, right? Like, you get additional rewards if you can do certain things. So, like, for instance, the level I started with, if the princess never took damage, I think this is what it was, then I got like additional level up points, right? Second time I did it, one of the challenges was to use two different protectors in the game, right? So I had woodcutters and I had archers. And when I started that level, all I had was woodcutters because that's all I had unlocked. So I just went back into that same level and did that, knowing that I needed to change up who I had on the roster. And then, you know, as long as I beat it, I got those additional level up points, which I can use to then build on my base and get additional, I guess, materials and abilities for my characters. So Kanitsugami so far is pretty neat. If any of that sounded appealing, try it out if you got Game Pass for sure.
You've got a lot of these hard to pronounce games lately.
Oh yeah, like Shimigami Tensei.
Right.
I haven't recorded any video of that. I've gotten through the second boss on that. This is my ADD gaming, right? Like all of these games, I've got about roughly 6 hours on. But I've got a huge spread because I wanted to give us a lot of variety for this week, and then I'll kind of focus down one or two of these. I don't know that I can beat any one of these next week, except for maybe Boar Blasters. But I don't really have anything else on my radar, so I'm just going to kind of play whatever seems fun. They all seem fun, but, you know, like whatever's tickling my fancy, like whatever's good for me at the moment, I suppose. But I really like these types of games. That is a lot of game. Can we take a break?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, we'll be back.
It's a part two. So, doing news about video games.
Yeah.
What a crazy day. So, anywho, there is news about video games going on. There is a report that 82% of U.S. gamers made an in-game purchase in freemium titles in 2023. This includes mobile gamers. Okay. So, which makes sense. Like, my girlfriend's not a gamer, but she plays some mobile games. Like, we'll be talking and she'll be playing a mobile game while we talk, and I'll be playing, I call them a real video game. like it said, essentially, you know, U.S. gamers spent 45 billion hours on gaming sites and apps last year. 62% of adults over age 18 engage in gaming, with millennials comprising 49% of that segment, followed by Gen Z at 13%. I believe the millennial thing. Like, I've watched you see a lot of the videos why millennials aren't aging the same way as, you know, Gen Z is, etc. And I think part of it is like we've been big kids at heart. We've been big kids for a long time. And we're not all of us.
The biggest children.
We really are. And with adult responsibilities, which is so crazy. Like, even a few months ago, one of the VPs is just a few years older than me. He had brought up that he games a little bit. And then it turns out, like, he's a huge Diablo fan. And he's, like, 5 years older than me. And we got to talking on the side about something. And then, I'd brought up, like, oh, yeah, what were you doing last weekend? It's like, oh, I was tweaking some things on my PC. He's like, oh, do you do, like, something outside of here that you use your PC for? It's like, yeah, I play video games. It's like, oh. It's like, well, I play a lot of Diablo 4.
No.
Well. And then he got to talking about what's the season that he was in, et cetera. Like, got really into his Barbarian that he was playing, which was just kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like our generation, though, is a bunch of big kids. But that being said, there's also a lot of freemium games that have been out. And I tried one for science. I had my eye on it, to be fair, right? There was a Korean game called Once Human. Looks pretty, but is just some of the most bland gameplay that I've ever played. I really wanted it to be cooler than it was. I think a lot of it, and
to be fair, like I played for about an hour before I shelved it. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that the controls felt really floaty, right? And that the gameplay didn't seem to be driven by anything that made a difference. Like a lot of the creature design and stuff like that was really neat, but it just, everything about it just felt a little bit off. And then I started watching people that played a million hours. And essentially the combat can be, or the story can be gotten through in about 20 hours. Everything's done in like a 6-week cycle, I think. It's either a month or a 6-week cycle. And they erase all the progress aside from the blueprints that you opened. Most of the missions are fetch missions, or clear out an area kind of missions, right? And then there's none of the bosses were hard. So watching somebody that I knew was actually a worse gamer than me, somebody who struggled with Elden Ring, saying that it was easier, that it was too easy for him, made me think, well, I don't want to just like face roll my keyboard for 30 hours just to experience this thing. Like I have to have a little bit of challenge. Like I have to lose. There has to be a lose state. I have to feel like I accomplished something, right?
Oh yeah.
Face roll gaming for me.
You kind of lost Ark it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Lost Ark was the same thing, right? Like you play and it's basically like complete face roll gaming. There's a whole reason I was just like, this is too fucking easy. If there's no challenge, then I don't want to do it. It's just no challenge. I'll grind for things. And, Once Human, not really for me. I haven't really made freemium purchases. I've made purchases in Helldivers, right? But it was for additional content, that's unlocked, and you can also buy some of that content by playing a lot. I never played enough to get some of that stuff. The purchases were not that expensive, so never felt bad about that for the, you know, hundreds of hours I've put into it. There's a lot of stories that came up in the last week about the player base dropping off. I think me being a little bit of a troll, not even really trollish behavior, but I sometimes troll on those communities, had posted something to the effect of, like, there's a lot of us that also play other games during a year. I play about 40 games a year. And at a certain point, I've gotten my fill for a moment, and I will go back when there's a slow period because I know that game's already good. But I don't obsessively game the same game. I'm not that type of gamer that plays Call of Duty all year or Battlefield all year, right? I play different things all the way throughout the year. There are some people that no-life certain games. I'm just not one of them. I think the people that are still playing are mostly the no-life people, not new players, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. Just we do a gaming podcast, and I got to talk about more than three games a year. And I also have a little bit of ADD, so I end up playing other things or having a different flavor of something that I want to actually do.
And I have that same problem. Like I don't really even think it's a problem. It's just like, look, I've had my fill of a thing. I like it. I'll go back to it. It is a thing. But I'm more of I need to have flavor. And there's there's different flavors out there, and I can go and have my fun with, say, like, you know, my soul stint, for instance. It's like I played Dark Souls 3 three times, played through fucking Elden Ring three times, played through Dark Souls Remastered, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm all about this. And then there comes a point where I'm like, you know what? I've had my fill of the Souls buffet. I need to go find something else to try.
That's exactly where I'm at. I have played 90 days of Souls since my dad died, and I needed a different flavor. I've been having, I've essentially been having apple pie for 3 months, and while I like apple pie, like I need something else. And then I will go back to that and finish it. I've got, I don't know, probably 20 hours left of Shadow of the Erdtree. I will definitely finish it before the end of the year. Got a lot of cool stuff to try that's just completely in a different wheelhouse, and I need that right now. Speaking of mobile sales, though, so we had talked about months and months ago how Resident Evil 7 was coming to iOS, and it was only coming to – was the newest version of the 15, iPad and the iPhone 15.
Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sold less than 2,000 units. It was downloaded 83,000 times on iOS, but those did not translate to full sales. Capcom only made $28,000 from the title. And this is before the 30% cut that Apple deducts.
Oh, my God. It makes me kind of happy in a way because they were trying to sell that game for fucking full price, I think, weren't they?
Yeah, and I think it's good because it says that these type of games aren't for mobile, so mobile doesn't need to be the platform that takes over for that. Mobile is the platform for Kingdom Rush. You know, it's something like that, or, you know, Flappy Bird was a big one. I you can tell I don't play a lot of mobile games.
Right. There's some mobile some games that, you know, that fit for mobile, but when you want, basically, you know, it's not for AAA titles. It's for time wasters. It's for idle clickers.
It's for 5 minutes of pushing out that difficult shit. Like, it's not.
Right.
Or, you know, like I said, my girlfriend, I can't even remember what she plays. She plays like a handful of mobile games on her phone while she talks. And she just does that, has to do something with her hands while she talks. I mean, the exact same way, right? I'm playing Mech Warrior. She's playing who knows what on her phone. But, you know. There's a subset of people that works for. It's not right to not call them gamers, but they game differently than it's games that you don't have to be fully engaged with, right? Stuff that are just clickers, stuff that are just waiting on bars and meters to fill up, right? Where you click every so often, get a little bit of a dopamine rush, but it's definitely not the same.
It's kind of like, you know, people who play slot machines aren't real gamblers, you know. It's the same damn thing. I mean, they're still putting their money in, right?
Yeah.
But it's a different class. And I mean, those people who, you know, who only have time to be able to go through, like, you know, 5 minutes while they're taking a shit or whatever of, you know, of playing a video game, at least they're getting their game in, you know. They're having fun while they're squeezing one off. So more power to them. I mean, that might be the only piece that they, you know, that they get in a day. So, you know, why shit on them?
As long as my Elden Ring is it a mobile only port, I'm fine.
Right. But I'm not looking for anything AAA on my, you know, on my mobile devices. Like,
well, I did I talk don't about
need that on my phone.
There's one exception to that rule. There was a few business trips I had to go on in 2017. I want to say it was 2017. Maybe it was a little bit later. But anyways, XCOM, the original remake, right? The original Jake Solomon version of XCOM was on my iPad. And I played the shit out of that while I was on a business trip, and that was awesome.
Okay.
But it's a game that's pretty easy to port to a mobile platform with a touchscreen because it's a mouse and keyboard game that's turn-based, you know?
So there's a...
That was awesome.
No, there's kind of like a, you know, a middle ground for mobile gaming. And I'm not saying that the mobile gaming is like inferior. I mean, if you look at the history of Monster Hunter, for instance, Monster Hunter as a franchise was mobile gaming. You know, it was very popular in Japan, and it was played on Nintendo devices.
Nintendo devices, not phones, though.
Right, but that's the thing. It's a mobile device that people carry around with them, and, you know, and it was meant to be played in short bursts. Whereas, you know, it's kind of the same thing with phones. The thing is with phones, you end up having a lot more apps that are of the freemium nature, which cost nothing to download. But if you want to actually, like, have certain bonuses or whatever, you pay, like, $5 or whatever it is, whatever the, you know, the microtransaction is for that game. And, you know, there's different practices that, you know, that catch people off guard, you know, and that's probably why, you know, that 80-ish% of people, you know,
bought something for that. I'd like to see how many of those were, you know, kids with their parents' phone, you know. But still, it's you know, it's the kind of, you know, that kind of, you know, that gaming. I mean, my nephews play all kinds of mobile games on, you know, on the phone. And, you know, one of them happens to be like the mobile Minecraft. And they're like, you know, teach me how to make a nether portal. And I'm like, I vaguely remember how to do this. Let me show you, you know. But still, it's,
you know, I'm A-okay with my Steam Deck being able to play 60 to 80% of everything I play on my PC, and I will be taking that with my business trip next month.
Yeah, and that's, and I think that's kind of like the, you know, there's different tiers of mobile gaming. Like you said, Nintendo's not your phone.
Yeah, it is the top tier.
Right. You know, that's a mobile PC you can put in your pocket, you know.
And you can hook up to a TV, which I have done multiple times while traveling. It's been my travel companion. That being said, something that is inexpensive and well worth it is No Man's Sky has a huge update. It's like, when are they never updating this game? But they did update a whole bunch of graphical stuff with the game, so changed a lot of the way that water is rendered, changed that you could land ships on water, which is kind of weird, changed like the wave tech, changed a lot of the weather system, so now there are weather on planets, and then redid a whole bunch of the aliens. A lot of it is exploration based and world building based, but seeing the video for it, it looks pretty neat, and it's also $23.99 through the end of the month, through the 29th anyway. So, I mean,
unless you're like me and you've bought that thing 8 years ago and that game just continually fucking updates for free. Right?
Right.
That's some of the craziest things, is that it's never really been monetized. It's just buy the game, and they've just continually added shit to that game for 8 fucking years. That is nuts. I mean, I can see, I mean, it had a rocky beginning, right? It was not what, you know, what was on the tin, you know, when it first came out. It was still good. It was just, you know, it was just not exactly what was,
it wasn't,
you
know, fleshed out.
Sold.
It was, right. It was pretty bare bones, honestly.
But the thing is that I expected them to go, okay, well, we'll support this game for, you know, a couple of years, 2-3 years maybe, and it's just going to kind of like go by the wayside, right? You know, when they say No Man's Sky is like the, you know, has a redemption arc, I mean, the fact that they continually, you know, throw those updates out there for free, you know, that do a lot to change, you know, how the game plays, how the game looks, all of that jazz. That is, you know, I expected that for a couple of years, not 8. You know, they're continually adding to this game.
Yeah, I bought it on PS4.
Right.
And then bought it on PC.
And I think I played through the game like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 times. And I mean, I'm downloading it now hearing this, because I'm like, okay, this might be maybe an exploration game is something that I need, something that I can just chill to, you know? So I'm going to give it a try. See if it happens. Probably won't click with me like the first 5 times, but still I'll give it a try. Shit, I've still got a background that is basically a screenshot from this game. You know, it's, I mean, I would be surprised if people don't know what No Man's Sky is. And it's also one of those things. It's got me actually kind of excited for Light No Fire.
Yeah, they've learned a lot with No Man's Sky.
Right. So, I mean, if they can take what they learned from No Man's Sky and apply that to, Light No Fires, and make that successful right out of the gate, then they've got a hit on their hands. Like, they've already got the goodwill of the, they went from being like one of the most reviled fucking games to having the best goodwill out of all of the games just because of how they've been supporting the game and fixing shit and doing things with it. So, it's interesting. I'll be very interested to see how that, how this all works out, because Light No Fires is definitely on my list of games that I want to play. Not just because it's like fantasy oriented or anything, but I want to see what they do with it. But
go ahead. I've got other things in the background.
Yeah. Speaking of fantasy stuff, there's been, everybody knows I play a little bit of Final Fantasy 14.
A little bit often.
And some of the things that they do for Final Fantasy 14 is, especially right around like expansion launches, is kind of out there, kind of crazy. Here in, in the U.S., there was a Mountain Dew promotion where it had codes under a cap, and you can get a bunch of different things for having the an amount of codes that you get from the underneath the caps of Mountain Dew. It included a mount. And
did you do this? Did you do this?
I don't normally drink Mountain Dew. See, and I'm more of a Dr. Pepper guy, so I don't drink Mountain Dew. I go, yeah, but I bought the Mountain Dews, or my buddy buys the Mountain Dews, and it just like, takes the codes from under the caps, and it's like, okay, well, now I have to choke down this Mountain Dew, right? I only did enough for the mount, and that was it. I'm like, I don't need anything more, but if you ever play an MMO, the mounts are kind of like a status symbol, right? And especially limited time things like this, you can't get it anywhere else. That's kind of important. Well, one of the things that's that Final Fantasy did is they've got a collaboration with a bubble tea brand called Gongcha.
What?
I've never heard of this before, and I don't think there's a store anywhere near me. But they have a promotion going on through the end of August, where if you go to a Gongcha store and buy 3 boba tea drinks in one transaction, you get a redemption code for a special mount called a Porksy King mount. It was a mount that was only available in Japan, but you can get it here in the U.S. by going to this thing. So now there is a brand, a store that you can go to get boba tea. And you know what boba tea is, right?
Yes, the little tapioca pearls.
Yeah, tapioca pearls at the bottom of, of a flavored tea drink, right?
Yeah,
so there's people that are going to these stores because they're not very like widespread. Like I don't think you've ever heard of Gongcha. Have you?
No.
Okay. Well, neither have I. There are people going to these stores and buying like hundreds of boba tea drinks to get the redemption codes and just unceremoniously throwing the drinks in the trash. And walking out with the you know, with the codes. And then they're going and flipping them online for $100, $150 a code.
Jeez.
And
all those rotting tapioca balls.
And there's, yeah, and the, you know, I mean, the store has to make the drinks. Like, you can't, you know, they couldn't just sell the codes. They have to make three drinks that they know are going to just get thrown in the trash. So it's just a weird thing. Like, I can't, you know, can't imagine that, like, each one of those drinks is like maybe, you know, guessing like $6, right? I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah, but if they're spending, you know, $18 or $20 or whatever for, you know, for a code and flipping it for $150 online, I mean, it makes financial sense, I suppose. Those industrious fools. But it just goes to show, like, just about anything can be scalped these days, including codes for a fucking mount in a game. I mean, if you're a mount collector, that is the only way that you're going to get one, unless you want to get on a plane and go to where a Gong Cha store is and buy three Bubba Tea drinks sometime between now and the end of August. But I think that was kind of like, that's some of the craziest shit. I could never bring myself to spend that much money on a fucking code for a mount that I'll probably never use, because it's a flying pig. That's what it is. A flying pig with a crown on top of it.
And people are paying $100 for that?
And they're paying $150 for it.
For a flying pig.
For a flying pig with big, big Dumbo ears. Yeah. Yeah. That's how crazy shit gets sometimes. I mean, yeah. I have no segue, so take it over.
Wow.
Craziness, man. It's just nuts.
Well, on a little bit lighter news, in spite of the fact that Microsoft announced a newer pricing structure for Game Pass that will, you know, undoubtedly alienate some of their existing users, but then also bring in new users, because let's face it, Call of Duty is going to Game Pass.
Right.
They are projecting an increase of revenue over the next year by 35%, generating up to $5.5 billion.
That's
a lot.
That's a lot of money.
How much did they pay for the Call of Duty franchise?
They paid like over $60 billion for Activision as a whole.
And
Activision Blizzard.
And they're looking at an increase, just, and that's just basically taking into account probably, you know, just the Call of Duty fans. I mean, as soon as they fully integrate the Activision Blizzard, you know, everything into Game Pass, that's going to jump. I mean, realistically, we haven't seen World of Warcraft actually touch Game Pass yet. And as soon as World of Warcraft drops onto Game Pass, you're going to see a big, big jump. And I'm not sure if that's what they're aiming for, but I mean, Game Pass has got other MMOs on it, so, you know, it's not unheard of to be playing, you know, an MMO on Game Pass. So, I can definitely see that for the first year. I'd heard, you know, quite a bit about like the rising rates for the Xbox Game Pass and like the like the FTC wanted to actually do something for you know, against the price hike, I think. And I don't know if there's really anything that, you know, that's going to come from it, but it's, they were just trying to say that, yeah, this is why they were trying to oppose it, you know, from the get go, is that as soon as these new, you know, the influx of new games comes into, and becomes part of, you know, Xbox's, you know, studio mound of, developers, and stuff starts filtering into Game Pass, it's going to raise the price of Game Pass. And that's, you know, they're, you know, basically the FTC is like, we told you so. But I mean, look at all the shit that we're getting in Game Pass. I mean, we've on this podcast, we've talked about Game Pass as like, you know, it, for what you're getting out of it, it's a good deal.
Yeah.
And even with the rate, the price hike, it's still a good deal.
I'm getting playing Kanitsugami off of Game Pass right now.
Right. And that would have cost you what, $40, right?
$49.99.
You know, to go through and play or at least try a game through there, before you go full in and on a purchase, that's not a bad deal at all.
I mean, I'm trying it out. I use it to try out games too. Sometimes end up buying later, but there's another one called Dungeons of Hinterlands that I didn't even talk about that I've started this week, but just barely touched, and that's $30 on Steam. So I'm playing, you know, let's just 30 plus 50, right? I'm playing $80 worth of games for right now $16.99, and I guess in the future $20. So
right,
playing that this month, and then if I don't play anything next month, I'm still okay. But like Frostpunk launches in September, that'll be a $50 game. So again, like I'm usually getting my money's worth.
Yeah, and that's if you look at it from just a gameplay perspective. If you're jumping around games quite a bit, it's gonna pay for itself just in like if you pick up one indie title a month, you know, something worth $20, it pays for itself right there, and then you have access to a bunch of other shit. Like I feel like I'm, you know, marketing Xbox Game Pass at this point, but sponsors.
I mean, it's an unintentional shill. Like it's just right. Something that we use because the amount of time that we game or the amount of games that we play over the course of a year, it kind of evens itself out. Like Jason probably utilizes it more than me and you, but still, like there's a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, it's good. It's just it is a good value for the amount of game that, you know, that gets on there, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger. So hopefully it doesn't, you know, get super, you know, super expensive. I think it right now is it's priced about right. But if it got much more expensive in a short period of time, I think there would be some torches and pitchforks. But
yeah, the something else has happened recently. Space Marine 2 had a leaked build leaked to the pirating community. I don't want to call them a community, but you know, right. I think it was on 4chan. But anyways, it's a year old and they're telling people don't play it. They're really worried about surprises coming out. That's a game I'm going to, if it's not on Game Pass, I'm going to play it. If it's on Game Pass, I'll play it. But I'm looking forward to Space Marine 2, as Space Marine 1 12 years ago was fucking awesome. So
I think it'll be all right. You know, looking at some of the stuff that they've released, you know, just to the public, it looks like it would be, you know, a fun time at least. I'd give it a try. You know, there's everybody, you know, if you're looking at the 40K universe, the, you know, the power fantasy is to be a space marine. So there really isn't any other unit that's like as iconic as a space marine from the 40K universe, I think.
It does space marine, right? It's Gears of War Warhammer version.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's I gotta have that. Let's see.
Speaking of space marines, 343 Industries is getting the rug pulled out from underneath them. Not totally, but in the last year, they've went from 500 employees down to 280.
Oof.
The report that I was reading says they won't be involved in development beyond pre-production and supervision. So 343 is not going to be at the forefront of developing the Halo franchise going forward, or at least for the time being.
Yikes.
And I'm guessing that's because Halo didn't do as well as a flagship franchise as it has in years past. Might just be that it's our generation that likes Halo, and then the newer generation doesn't get Halo the same way that we did.
Well, I mean, from a perspective of somebody that's, you know, kind of grown up through that, I didn't really like Halo to begin with. Like, something about it was...
It just wasn't gritty enough for me.
Well, for me, it was everything felt too soft. Like, everything had shields, and everything just, it didn't feel right, you know? The Halo story, I mean, the Halo story was, you know, relatively decent. Like, it spun off a bunch of other stuff, and it has a fully fleshed out world, which is not, you know, kind of good. I'd say that the later entries into the Halo franchise was kind of went off of rails a little bit, as far as story wise, but still was relatively enjoyable. I just couldn't get into the multiplayer for it, and it didn't have lasting appeal for me. There's other people that, you know, really love like playing through some of the old Halo stuff, but I think it's run its course. I think they just, you know, they either need to pivot away, or do something different with the Halos, you know, with the Halo series. I think that the games that they did move away from the Master Chief, storyline actually were really successful. I mean, if you look at, you know, Halo Reach, fairly successful as far as a game was concerned. ODST, was probably one of the better multiplayer versions of Halo from what I've...
We liked the Horde mode. That's what it was.
Yeah. I never played any of the multiplayer, but, you know, whenever I ask somebody what's their favorite Halo, I was like, oh man, I miss the days of ODST. Like, okay. Some of that just needs to... They just need to capture that again. It doesn't have to be Master Chief every fucking game. Speaking of, I think that's actually kind of going through, the live action series that was put on Paramount Plus. that is coming to an end after season two. I have not watched one of these episodes, but I have heard that they were not great.
Jason, didn't you watch the whole thing?
I think I don't know where he went. Maybe he just took a shit.
Maybe so.
Anyway,
I was muted because my door got opened.
I tended to really like the show, actually.
Oh, really?
But, okay. I thought its one big failing was that there really wasn't enough action. I did like some of the supposition around Halsey, yada, 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 but there just wasn't enough action. And I thought it was a little, the one thing I thought was a pretty major cop out was them deciding that the Covenant would be represented by a human that they had basically kidnapped.
Wait, what?
Ago.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, that I can already see why this
representation
failed.
Representation throughout the show. And the basically the whole reason Master Chief ends up heavily engaged with the Covenant and then directly involved is that the this representative he basically ended up protecting her from the time he went to a for lack of a better term insurrectionist human colony until the whole major conflicts with the UNSC started in season 2. It's basically him denying orders and protecting her.
That sounds very not Halo.
And for a lot of it, he's not in a suit.
Yeah. He's not in his armor for a good majority of the series as a whole.
Right. See, I mean, one of the things about Master Chief was, you know, was like, you know, what's his face look like, you know? For, you know, for a long time, he just like stewed in his fucking suit. The show completely demystifies that entire thing and then makes it and then normalizes the fact that he just walks around without his fucking, you know, his armor on. So it just was not, I don't think it was, you know, it was done quite well. Like there's going to be hits and misses as far as video game, video game ties into, tie-ins to like
The Witcher completely right. removing Henry Cavill for what's his face.
That was unfortunate. It's showbiz is kind of, you know, Hollywood's been on its last legs as far as, you know, imaginative writing. It doesn't surprise me one bit that they took a beloved video game franchise, took a shit on it. We still have, you know, a couple examples of video game movies that did work.
We have shows, freaking Fallout Man, like, knocked it out of the park. You know, they're receiving 16 Emmy nominations right now.
Yeah. I mean, and they're doing
that show was awesome.
Right. That is a, that's an example of, you know, one that did it right.
Prime knocked it out of the park with that one.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, Walter Goggins stole the damn show.
Well, he did, but.
Best. Well, he's been an awesome in a lot of things. But that show was awesome, and that's from a Fallout fanboy. That show was awesome. A lot of nods to a lot of things. They did so much justice to that show, or to that franchise with that show. It was literally Fallout. That's what it was, and it was. I think it was summed up best of. I can't remember the exact quote, but essentially, never underestimate someone's ability to get distracted by so much bullshit or something like that, right?
The side quest
Quests. Yeah. And that's what Fallout is. It's here's a main quest. It can take you like It's a 100-hour game, but it's 16 hours of main quest. All the rest is side quest. And that's what that show is. It's like, here's what we started with. Here's what we're going for. Here's the impetus for the whole story on what it's driving it, right? And here's something that comes up that kind of diverts from the main story. Here's another thing that comes up that diverts from the main story. That's literally Fallout. And they did it really well. And it had the humor right. The tone was right. It didn't have like a whole like side allegorical message to go along with it. It was literally just a show for Fallout fans and a show right. for people that don't know what Fallout is to give you enough to understand what it is. Like even my girlfriend watches. She's like, this is a pretty cool show. She's not a Fallout fan. Barely didn't know what it was until she started dating me, right? She's like, because I was watching it. She's like, I'm curious. I want to check it out, right? She's like, that's a really cool sci-fi. She's just kind of like got strong Mad Max vibes, but she's like, the humor is a lot different than what I expected. Right. Like, it's really visceral. It's like, yeah, it really is visceral. That's Fallout. It's visceral yet funny. But,
yep.
Yeah.
It's irreverent yet respectful.
Yeah. And it doesn't, it didn't piss off the audience. Like, that's crazy. It's crazy they got it that right. Like, it didn't devolve into, like, the thing The Last of Us got wrong is, like, The Last of Us game has a lot of story, right? And again, I don't see a lot of people, aside a lot of fans, digging into the part two that they're going to do because most of the fans didn't like part two. We bought it thinking it would be good, as good as part one. So the sales on that are pretty strong. The day one sales of part two are really good, but most of us, it fell apart when Joel died, right? Well, they're going to have to kill off Pedro Pascal to do the story the same way. And I'm not sure that the rest of the audience wants to see Pedro Pascal die. Like, they were already attached to him, right? So I don't know what they're going to do with season two with that. And that show, the storytelling was, it's good enough that my boss, who is not a gamer at all, and you guys know who my boss is. We won't say it on air, but she was like, oh, yeah, I was watching this thing. She's like, my daughter and her husband were watching The Last of Us. And she's like, I had no idea that that was a game adaptation. She's like, man, that games have come a long way in a long time in mm-hmm. the years. She's like, it's a really good story. It's like, I wasn't really into the gore so much. She's like, I was really invested in that story. And so, like, they did a good job with that, right? Like, making it very character centric. But what they didn't get right is it didn't have the hopelessness and despair and, like, moment-to-moment survival that Last of Us has. There's a lot of, like, really tense situations in Fallout, Last of Us that they just didn't nail. Like, there's a whole lot of, like, I'm just barely surviving in the game. There's a whole lot of, like, there's way too many things attacking me to get out of this. There's that whole basketball gym scene that they didn't capitalize on, right? And they just kind of jumped to the end, and like, there's a lot of like high octane moments they just missed. And it's good. Like, they didn't really take away too much from the series. It's just, it missed some of the high octane moments that that series had and that tension it had. And I just, because they focused so much on the story, again, they did a really good job with the story. They just, that other stuff that makes that game really cool of surviving by the skin of your teeth. You know, I only have two blades. I have six clickers in this room. What do I do? I'm going to have to figure out how to take out these two and sneak by the rest of them, right? I only have four shots left in this gun. I really hope I nail headshots once everybody gets alerted, right? Like, that kind of stuff. And there's right. only a few moments in that show that really capitalize on that, and the rest of it is just story building, which, again, the story's pretty good. I just wanted more of the other.
It's hard to capture all of that in
like eight episodes,
you know, in eight episodes for sure. But, you know, that kind of tense situation is also really hard to grasp, you know, live action. Cause I mean, in the game, you can see in your UI, you've got two blades, you've got four shots or whatever, but you know, It would be kind of weird for the character to kind of like open up his gun and look and see how many shots he's got and be like, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, you know? I actually think they made a lot of smart choices. I just think Fallouts were smarter.
I think Fallout just knocked it out of the park. It's such a perfect adaptation of what that show is, or what that franchise is. It's so spot on, and it helps that the people involved with this, a lot of them were big fans of the whole thing, you know.
And I think that might be one of the things that was the downfall for Halo, is that there wasn't a whole lot of I don't know anything about the background of it, but I can tell you that it feels like the passion wasn't there. If it was a bunch of people who are invested in Halo, they would have probably made it so that Master Chief was more like Mando, keep his armor on and do the reveal of his face as the end of a season, right? Don't take his armor off and just make him like a normal Joe Schmo.
Yeah, he needs to be basically a space marine. He's a cyborg. Right.
That's my thoughts on it.
I haven't played everything that we've talked about for this month, right? Like, I haven't played Angerfoot, and I don't know if I am or not based on everything that I got. I will say that Flintlock is a lot less more soul. The only Souls-like component of that is you pick up your currency if you die. But it plays out a lot more like God of War, and a pretty mediocre God of War. So if you're interested, just try it on Game Pass. I bounced off it really hard. Just not enough tactical combat and variety for me. I know that there's, if you're looking for EDF, I don't have anybody to play EDF with. If you really want me to play EDF with you, it's Nostalgia on Steam. I might be convinced to play it. But EDF is coming out later this month. In fact, by the time you listen to this, probably EDF will come out. Once Human, I already tried that. I can tell you, watch some gameplay. If aggressively average gameplay is, and some aggressively average scavenging with some decent build mechanics that is kind of janky and appeals to you, it is free. But these are not like knock it out of the park things. Angerfoot might be, but I wasn't looking for something that was that fast paced. Were you going to go through the games coming up, Rusty?
I can go through a few. EDF definitely was one of the ones that was this month. Exophobia F1 Manager 24.
I don't know what that is.
Dead Link, which is at the it's at the end of the month, July 30th. Starting in August, the Star Wars Bounty Hunter, August 1st.
That's the remake.
Volgar the Viking 2, Cat Quest 3, Madden NFL 25 is coming out August 16th. Black Myth Wukong, August 20th.
Curious about Black Myth.
Mm-hmm. I know Tria, The Last Song, Concord, Gundam Breaker 4, Visions of Mana on August 29th, and Star Wars Outlaws on August 30th.
I'm going to watch some gameplay of that before I decide on that. I'm not going to buy it day one. I'm going to watch some people play it and see what that looks like before I give it a shot, because Ubi has burned me for 10 years now. Which does not make me that confident in their ability. Full disclosure, I go through and look at gameplay vids of up and coming indie titles, and I will say I wish I was had the time to do it, but the guy I think that does the best at that I still watch a lot of stuff of, that I'll just skim a bunch of videos of when I'm looking for new stuff, is a guy called Splattercat Gaming. The Welcome to the Nerd Castle guy, he's great. He plays a lot of indie games, and every few days posts, and you get a really good look at what an indie game is from his stuff. So, and he goes into the depths of the Steam library to find stuff. And so some of the stuff that I actually have that I didn't talk about today is actually Splattercat recommendations. I spent about $20 getting about, I think, 3 games. some of them on sale, some of them not on sale, to play a bunch of stuff that I found out about through Splattercat Gaming. But we play a lot of indie games on this show, and or things that are not necessarily AAA. And that is a good source. And that's full disclosure. I find a lot of stuff through that guy. It's not just me digging through Steam, you know. Occasionally it is. Half the time it is.
I dig through Steam. I have quite a few of the Discovery queue. I've got some numbers there. I've seen some shit. But
yeah,
Black Myth is really picky.
Yeah, Black Myth is probably the biggest thing that looks like it's interesting. Is it's kind of a Soulsborne-ish God of War style action RPG game where you play as a giant monkey. Is that right?
You play as the Monkey King from what is it?
It's an old Chinese fantasy.
Journey to the West.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of games that have actually been based on that.
Journey to the West.
That's, I want to say there's a 360 game I played a lot of that was based on that. I can't remember what it was.
The Monkey King is actually, you know, it's used quite a bit. That is a fairly well known mythological story. And that's had some that I've heard different versions of, you know, of the Monkey King throughout my entire life. Like different stories, different video games.
It was Enslaved Odyssey to the West. That's what I played.
Yeah. See,
that came out. It's a Ninja Theory game in 2010. I was playing that before we really started this show.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago. That was 14 years ago.
It'd be a very old story. But this one kind of caught our attention when it was first announced, because it did have, you know, Souls-like combat, but also it was Souls-like combat, but with the speed of like Sekiro. Like it was faster than, you know, your normal Souls game, and I'm interested to see what the mix is there, because yeah, the Monkey King has some interesting abilities in the myth, and I want to see how that plays out. So that's a game it's definitely on the radar. I'll play the shit out of that.
I'm trying to figure out who Game Science is, though.
Oh, the developer. Are you looking for the developer?
Yeah.
It's
a Chinese developer.
It is. I want to say it's a Chinese developer. It was one of the things that, you know, we were kind of, I don't know.
It's their first game, too.
Kind of. Yeah, like what they did, or what, you know, what their history is. So,
I'm looking to see. It's literally the first game. They
haven't really had anything big. Art of War, Red Tides, and Legend of 100 Heroes. So Black Myth Wukong is like their first one that's like big underneath that title or underneath that developer name.
At least I don't remember the other two games. So, Art of War Red Tides is an RTS game. Was released on Steam. And I'm not sure about Legends of 100 Heroes, but well, I'm checking to see if it's on Steam right now. It's
interesting. I guess that we'll see what that has going on with it.
Yeah. That's the only question mark right now, is that it's kind of like it's coming from, you know, a Chinese developer, and we don't know what the what it's going to entail, but it looks great.
I mean, if what they've released deliver, yeah. I wonder, China doesn't have the biggest track record of originality. That's what I'm wondering about.
I mean, they're taking the Journey to the West, you know, character, you know,
it's a Chinese character, right?
Original. It's unoriginal from the very get-go because it's the Monkey King. Like,
no, I'm just talking about, are they using assets or paying people for music, etc.?
Oh, well,
because that's just been China in a nutshell the last 20 years. Lots of plagiarism in a lot of major markets for a lot of things, even down computer chips.
This one happens to be one of those, you know, those games. I'm more worried about them trying to monetize shit in it.
Yep, I am worried about that too. Like, I'll buy it. If I buy it, you know, it's going to be through a third party platform like Steam. I'm not going to give anybody over in China my credit card.
Right. That's to be seen. I don't know. It looks good so far. But you know, and I think we're all ready to try it at least. So.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's an Unreal 5 game, so it's going to look good. Whether or not it runs good or has good gameplay, that remains to be seen. So.
Yeah, so I've been disappointed before. I'm willing to check it out.
Right.
I actually don't have anything else. Do you guys have anything else?
Oh, man, this is the longest news section that we've had in a while, so I say we're good.
Yep.
Well, Jason, where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channels, youtube.com/realtiltcast, and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got the Picking Up the Pixels. And you've got tvgp.tv. They do great things, and they have Boston still after all these years. With that, it is the end of the show.
All right.
Peace. All right. Peace.